Commissioners meeting, San Juan Fire District number three for March 14th, 2023. I'll do a roll call of commissioners. Commissioner Olson.
Here.
Commissioner Colley.
Here.
And Chair Cardinale is here, so we're all in attendance. Do we have any additions or changes to the agenda?
Not from staff.
Okay. Are there any citizens' comments or correspondence? Let's start with correspondence because I know we got one of those. So do you want to give us some background on this?
Let me see which one that one is. So we received a, we received a thank you card and a $1,000 donation from the fire we had over at the laundromat over behind the fuel station off of Carter. They came in way unexpected, but they totally appreciated the support they had, the outcome that they had. And that's all we had for, correspondence.
Okay, great. Any citizens' comments?
Your chief, sorry about that.
Thank you. No worries.
More copies. There's so many peoples.
So many peoples. Okay. Okay, consent agenda. Are any corrections to the minutes for the regular meeting of February 14th?
And for me.
Albert, any corrections?
No, I'm fine.
Okay, so do I have a motion to approve the minutes for February 14th?
I'll make a motion that we approve the minutes as posted for February 14th, 2023.
Okay, I have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, any comments? Okay, hearing none. All in favor of approving the regular meeting of February 14th minutes? Aye.
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 Motion passes.
Great, thank you.
Okay, Chief, how about the bills and payroll?
Bills and payroll you have before you, if you want to start with bills that work.
Okay.
You have the standard lease for the boat, which you see from reserve fund. And then you have your two-page document of the current bills from last month. Be happy to answer any questions on those. There wasn't anything that really jumped out of the ordinary on these.
Okay. Just Tad's not here, huh?
He's on duty.
One question. They've got
which page?
Page four from bills. Six from the bottom under facility maintenance, emergency lighting. Any idea what that was for?
Offhand, no, but Tad should be back shortly. They were on a call. I will ask and find that out. I don't remember off the top of my head what that one was.
Other than that, everything else seems to be in order. Anything?
I was just curious.
I do have one question.
Okay, hang on. We got Dwight's got a question.
Oh, go ahead.
Not that it was, it means anything. I'm just curious. The San Juan Island, you know, the state ferry.
Page page.
Feed in the ferry. It's on page three at the bottom.
Yeah, we have to pay. No, it's
what do we get for our $50?
No, that was a, that's someone using there.
That's a maintenance fee that they charge every month, every year.
It is. And what do we get out for that?
We're able to have an account where we can charge and pay it at the end of the month.
So as opposed to having one of the Wave to Go cards that has money stacked on it, we get that annual fee. So when we give someone a card, we don't have five that expire in 90 days.
Gotcha.
We use a card and it covers all of our cards. So there are how many total cards? Command off four or five total cards within the system. So if we have Carl go off to do training, we give him one of the Wave to Go cards. He comes back, it's all tracked when he gets back. And so we don't have stuff stacked on that expires. It's a $50 annual fee.
So it's just an annual fee.
It's a $50 annual fee so that we don't have to have it stacked, and it's an open account with them on all of our cards.
We get any kind of a discount or anything?
No.
Have you not?
Nope. No discount, no nothing. If we have to do an inter-island to go over, what I will say, so here's a prime example. When we had the fire on Spring Street and we brought apparatus over from Lopez and from Orcas that came and supported us on the fire, initially, they charged Inter-Island Ferry to bring the resources over. Later on, they stepped up and said, yeah, no, we're going to back those charges back out, because we got submitted requests from the responding agencies to reimburse them for the ferry fees to come over and support us, which we were going to do. And then the ferry system, just like the captain, stepped up on the ferry itself that said, no, we're going to put people up to help you do the fire. They came back and said, no, we're not going to charge you. And they backed it out.
Albert, did you have a question?
That my question got answered. I had the same question as Dwight.
Oh, okay. All right.
Any others? That's bills. The two payrolls that you have, you've got your the regular 40-hour week people, and then you've got your 24-day staffing. And you see, as we've got line items calling out for any firefighter overtime, specifically, you see where that is called out as well.
All right.
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
Make a motion that we approve the bills as presented for the month of March.
We do bills and payrolls in the same motion, or we have to?
You can do them the same, as long as you announce it that way.
Yeah. You want to announce it that way? Bills and payroll.
Bills and payroll.
Okay. Albert, do you want to second that?
I'll second that.
Great. Okay. I have a motion to pay the bills and payroll. Any discussion? Having heard none, take a vote. All in favor? Aye.
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 Okay. Motion passes. Okay. New business. I see that on new business, we have the 3-year audit outcome. And I had put together a press release, I guess.
Statement, yep.
And I don't think I gave you a copy, did I?
Mm-mm.
No. So I have it. Have it.
You can print it out really quick if you want.
Yeah. Let me see if I have it. It's amazing how you do something on your computer and all of a sudden it shows up on your phone. Yeah.
It's a good thing and a bad
thing. It's, yeah, exactly. Okay, let's see. What do we have here? I doesn't look like I have it. Nope. Okay. Well, I'll have to print that up and get it to you, or I'll just send it to you electronically. You want to talk about the outcome of our audit?
Sure. So 3-year audit, state does out of the state auditor's office. This was for 19-20-21, and it's an exhaustive audit. This particular, so last session they had looked at small and attractive, so any inventory that would have a propensity to grow legs, they wanted to see what the trackability of inventory is. This year they were looking at payroll, they were looking at accounts payable. So AP was a big focus this year of, as bills come in, how do we process them, validate them, pay them? And of course, they're always looking at it from a fraud perspective. They look at things from a board governance perspective to make sure that minutes are taken, the communication is out. And they do that for those 3 years. They request all documentation, so all bills, all copies of them, all invoices. So if there's an order that comes in, they want to see the packing slips. All of that was done electronically. And we got all that taken care of, copied, sent, and off to the auditor's office. Then they take their time, took them a little over I want to say about month and a half, 2 months to go through all the documentation that they got over the 3 years period of time. They were able to give us back their report. And then it gets posted on the state auditor site. You can see historically where it was. And staff is proud to let you know that the 3 year audit, they had no findings. And we're confident in how we manage, govern all the things that they assessed. And so there's a report back that says that they had zero findings found for the organization for that 3 year period of time.
So the next audit's going to be 2025.
2025 over 22, 23, and 24. Correct.
Will they use the same criteria or will be different?
They rotate the criteria. So will they do some every year or every cycle? And then they have certain things that they want to focus on. And they will look into those to see on any new pieces. So they want to kind of have that rotating. And then they also look back at a previous year's. And if there were any findings or recommendations that they had, how did you address those? Because they look at policy, they look at practice, and they want to make sure that they're all in line to assure that there isn't fraud and assure that things are managed appropriately. So I don't know what their next audit topic will be, but it'll be something in addition to the government's policy and otherwise.
Albert, do you have any questions?
No, I have none.
You good? Okay. Alrighty. Next item is the work session. We held a work session last
Wednesday.
And we went over the budget items. We talked about the monies that are coming in and being spent and the direction that's taking. We looked at the feasibility of a levy increase. Talked a little bit about, you know, maybe when should we do that and how much we would be a reasonable amount to ask for and why we would ask for it, how we would go about doing that. There were no decision making done at that time. It was just more of a fact gathering mission for us, and it brought to light some things that we will have to address at some point here in the future as far as funding's concerned. We can't maintain this level of service indefinitely without going out for an increase. It was noted that we are the lowest, we have the lowest levy of just about anybody, anywhere, especially within the island itself, and then even within the county. The other fire agencies are receiving quite a bit more, and yet they have less responsibility in some cases and less staffing. And yet we are able to do all the things that we do. At this point, it's still working. So we have some time to work this out, but we do need to address it at some point and fix it. So is there anything that you want to add to that?
I just wanted to add that I think under the circumstances that the department is run very well financially, and that it is entirely appropriate that we start now, because of what we saw in the last election, that we see that we start now to let the public be aware of the fact what we do and the fact that the inflation is eating us alive, and because of that, that's why we want the increase. It's not that we want to buy some more bells and whistles or anything like that. It's just that inflation is eating us up. And we presented documents showing historically where this inflation has been going. And then, of course, now it's going out as everybody is effing with everybody. You want to look at the egg prices. So we cannot provide the service that we're providing now. And if the pub, you know, that's what we have to make clear in the public. You either have to pony up a little more money, or you're not gonna get the services you're now getting that you clearly want. And it's just that they have to be educated about it. And that was the biggest point of my takeaway of this was that now's the time to start. But it's gonna take a couple of years to get that education out there to the public, let them see what we are and what we have in mind for them as far as an agency. So, no, I think it was a very worthwhile discussion.
Thanks for those comments. Albert?
Well, I'll make a comment, put a little something in perspective. Is our levy rate, the reason our levy rate is so low is because I'm sure we have one of the most expensive real estate climate of any fire district in the state of Washington. So I think that's why our levy rate is so low. Most districts don't have the miles of waterfront and the waterfront homes. But having said that, we still need to work on this. I think I'll expand on what Dwight said. I think we need to get back into a newsletter program so we can get out and put some facts out there. So prepare the people, you know, just by, you know, maybe we should put out at least a quarterly or a semi-annual newsletter and explain what we're doing and how we're doing it and, you know, what we have. That's all I have.
Thank you. Okay. Did you want to make any comments on the work session?
One, thank you for taking your time to do that. I think that the questions and the dialogue was well worth the time and effort to go in. I think that, as you stated, that the time is now to start educating or continue to do that on a more open basis. I like the idea of the newsletters. We know that the balance point of that is when you put out multi-page, full glossy, that's expensive. And so we want to find a balance point of getting good information out on a regular basis. At the same time, we want to be cost effective in how we go about doing that. Because as was noted, if we want to do an increased mailing, where does that shift some of the funds? We do budget for one, potentially two newsletter mailings in the existing budget. If we want to bump it to quarterly, we'll have to look and see where that costing is. Assistant Chief Mona, do you remember last time we did the mailings, what each one came in at approximately?
I don't remember precisely, but I want to say, and that was the last recruiting effort we did. Mm-hmm. It was for a firefighter. It was, I want to say it was around $5,000.
For a 4x6 yeah. card that went to all. So if we talk something bigger, and I'm not sure we need to do that, get a good card stock, get something that's a one or two color piece that has good front back information that's coordinated, that echoes information that they can get either in social media or on an online presence, I think that will start to drive it. The other piece that I think was important to take away from that on that education is, we have a partnership with the Firefighters Association that we have here, and we want to spool up. It had been a goal of mine from the beginning, and then COVID hit and we hadn't been able to pull it off, was a open coffee time with the chief, or some event where it's open. People can come in, they have dialogue, whatever is the questions that are there. And the association was willing to sponsor the coffee and any pastries or whatever that goes into it. I think that is another one that embeds in. We would have one of you all there as well, right? So a commissioner there, some leadership there, some crew there, and then the public can come in and have good dialogue and interaction. And I think we need to spool up that sooner than later.
Yeah, I think that would be really a good idea. And with the information in the mailers, start off with information, who we are, what we do, mm-hmm. you know, all touchy-feely nice stuff. And then as we get closer to whatever our date is for get it on the ballot, then we can start talking about some of the issues and reasons for asking for a levy, you know. So first, tell them who we are, and then tell them why we're gonna, we need to do this.
Mm-hmm.
The last election that we had, while it was disappointing, we did get 56% of the vote. And, you know, that was and that was over a controversial issue. This, to me, isn't controversial. It's just a matter of, do you want to do it or not? And so I'm hoping that this would be more, the citizens would be more inclined to vote for it, because it's just maintaining pretty much what we have and continuing on foreseeable future.
Right. Before I remiss, I want to mention something that I took note on that Commissioner Colley had asked a question on, and that was, is there a roadmap on how to go about doing this? I think that as we look forward, especially as we start a media campaign, whether it's mailing or otherwise, I think that it would be a little bit of time well spent to put out an RFP that asks for any of the consultants that do this and help government entities to go out and or get and or pass a levy, because I think that would empower you all with, here's the number of what it costs if we want to get a consultant to drive where we go. There's some tried and true ways to do it, but we know that we have some unique nuances within our community. And something, as we've had dialogue over the years, and I'll mention Mo C on this one, is it's about we as a community and how we communicate and educate each other. So what are the concerns coming in from the public? How do we meet the mission and the expectations of the community, the expectations of you as the board? And let's start driving that conversation. I made a note to ponder, go down that road of writing an RFP, or at least reaching out to two or three of those kind of consultants that I know do it, and have them give us a ballpark, maybe short of an RFP, say, here's what we're looking at. Give me a couple ballparks. And if it's something that says, okay, this might be a reasonable number, bring it back to you all to say, okay, let's plan that forward if you want to go down that road. But I can't speak to how much that would or would not be, but I think we need to ask the question to empower you with good information to make a decision moving forward, if that sounds reasonable to you.
Yeah, it does, because we're not experts, you know, in that field. We and having somebody come in and say, hey, this is the way to go about it. Again, if it's something that's cost effective for us.
We were fortunate with the last one that we do have our in-house person, but and that is Chuck Daldorf. At the same time, we're looking at something a little different, and I think it would be money well spent, or at least time well spent, to reach out to a couple of these groups that do that and ask, right, hey, what would it cost?
Yeah, it doesn't hurt. Yeah, you know,
doesn't hurt to ask.
Yeah. Yep. If you don't ask, the answer is always no.
Nope. Exactly. I have no other comments. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah. Okay. Old business, safe vote financing. What's going on?
Some of that came up at the workshop. Safe vote is still on track for delivery in June for delivery and sea trials. So as we know with our economic climate, I think it would be, again, time well spent now for one of the commissioners or the chair to go with me, and let's go talk to some of our local banks and see what we could get from an interest rate, a timeline perspective, so that it's not, because we're going to want to have some stuff drafted up. It will have to have some public discussion before we go down any of those loan points. This was all planned in the first place. And as we talked about, there is money for payments within the current year budget. I think now is the time to go talk to some of the banks, Savvy, and our local ones that we have, to see if we can keep the fire district business local. If not, do we need to look a little greater? There aren't grant funding that would be able to come in. We did try to put in, at the request of DNR, Department of Natural Resources, we had submitted last year on a grant to try to offset some of the costs. They thought that it was a great concept. It wasn't awarded last year because of the numbers. They encouraged us to put in again. And what we were looking at, because it does go out and protect some of the other islands from a wildland perspective, they said, yeah, put in for the fire pump capability on, and we might be able to approve that. Well, it wasn't approved. I got some notice here last week that it didn't move forward again this year. So we still had money within the budget to do that. We were hoping that we might be able to get some offset, but that didn't play through. So I think now give us a few months to get some research, see what the economic climate's going to do, especially since we've seen the bank failures at this point in time. Well, we know money's still out there. We know that the federal government, if we need to go down a longer term loan at a lower interest that still pays off sooner, because I know that that's one of Commissioner Olson's positions of we want to have a shorter term loan. So we get in, we get it done, and we move on, right? Well, if USDA, for example, in supporting some of the small community loans, if we could get one that happens to be a longer term loan, but it gets us in, it gets us locked at a low rate, yet you predicate to pay it off in the 4-year time frame, we're still meeting the obligation. Plus, it could potentially build in some flexibility for you should something go awry in asking for support to maintain the level of service that we have. So I think now, since it is March, if we're looking at a June date, and the nice thing with SafeBoat is it's a net 30 upon delivery and approval of what they've got. So if we take delivery within June, we would have to have everything finalized by sometime in July. So we have time, but not a lot of time.
Yeah. Okay. Why don't we get together and we'll discuss visiting, you know, set up schedule so we can go talk to, there's two or three banks or seven.
There's been three that predominantly been interacted with. So yeah, there's two I know of. I think that there was a third. So we've got Banner, we've got Savvy, Key was around, and Wells Fargo, because remember Wells Fargo is still down at the roundabout. Yeah. So we want to make sure that we talk to the banks, and if we can keep local, I think that's probably where the community would want us to push the funding.
Right.
If and possible.
That's also something in one of our newsletters. Is, you know, when that time comes where we take possession of the boat, we can also mention, and we kept the funds local by using local bank.
Mm-hmm.
And you've heard me say it before, and I'll keep reminding you, just because I like the idea, is the naming of the boat at some point. And what I've seen that the communities really get behind is when you go to the schools, I don't know what they call that. It's not. What's the grade 1 through?
Elementary.
Is it elementary? Yeah, elementary school level, and get the kids to, you know, with us having final approval for this. But you'd be surprised at some of the things they come up with that are really quite unique and brings the community in. There's a lot of things we can do when that time comes that will draw the community in and have them feel like it's, you know, it's one of their resources.
Mm-hmm.
There's that thing. You just used a key thing, and I think it's paramount that the community see this as their resource. This is not a fire department thing. It's a resource that the community needs, of course, but the community needs to put some, you know, money where their mouth is if they want where. You know, the services they are getting, but it is a community resource.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think any of the other agencies have taken that approach. So I think
it's, no, and I agree that from a previous experience that I had at previous departments, one of the things that it really echoes in true is when you re-emphasize that in your communication out to the areas. So speak a little history on me on where that plays out to your exact point, Commissioner Colley, is I was a captain at a station in the West Hills in Portland. And it was the expectation that the captain was the fire chief of that area. And every piece of equipment had it labeled as proudly serving whatever that area was on all 26 station areas and all 43 pieces of equipment. That was really cool. So the West Slope area, it was proudly serving West Slope. And then they had a little thing that it's all downhill from here on a little curve on the flow of the rig, which put a little humor into it, which came in from one of the citizens in the area, right? Because we were at the highest level by altitude. that really drove. So when the kids, you're out on a call and it's labeled as proudly serving. Think about here locally now. When we're in the parade, 4th of July, and we're out with the ladder truck, and you see Friday Harbor still listed on the aerial device, people gravitate and resonate with that. So I think that absolutely to your point, we're given the opportunity to protect the community with those resources, which is why we take care of them as we do, because it's the community's resources. The boat will be no different.
Any comments, Albert?
No, I'm fine. And, you know, and I'm not opposed to a longer payoff on the boat. My concern would just the interest rate to keep that figure down as much as we can to save money.
Yeah, we'll do the best we can with that. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
You know, our last, when we financed the new fire engines, they came through KeyBank, and I remember we worked, I think, with an office there, KeyBank office out of Denver or somewhere, and the interest rate of the loan was based on a 10-year treasury note. So I don't know if they still have that program going or not, but that might be worth looking at.
Okay.
We'll explore all avenues.
Okay.
All right. Let's move on to reports, financials.
I can make one piece on a semi-old business because I know that Commissioner Colley would be interested in this one. I do have an initial draft from the town of Friday Harbor for the inspection services. The reason it's not coming before you today is there's a few nuances in it that we want to make sure it's buttoned up first. I'll have some additional dialogue with the town administrator. When Administrator Culsep is available, there's some pieces that we want to make sure are flushed out first, costing from a compensation standpoint, some of the indemnification pieces. As you can imagine, as it was drafted from some boilerplate knowledge that or verbiage that we've had, is heavily weighted towards the town. We want to make sure it's open and equal between both of us. And then once that's a little more finalized, I'll bring it to you all, and then I'll push it to our legal counsel. I just didn't want to do that before we got a little closer, but we do have our first draft. And as I found out from looking at what's scheduled for the town meeting coming up, they want to move. They actually have it as an agenda item on Thursday for their town board meeting and visiting with Citizen Chief Mon, and we're not quite ready for that. So whether it's a tee up first conversation for them or not, it is a line item with a resolution. We're not ready with where it's come back, but it's very promising in the scope and what we want to do. It meets some of the mission of what we want. We just have to nail out some nuances on the compensation to make sure that our people's time is covered appropriately. So beyond that, the other piece I'm recommending that they do is we have a second one that will come before you either simultaneously or somewhere around the same time, is for us to be able to take on the responsibility for fire investigations. We had always talked about that in reading this initial draft for the ILA. I don't think we want to blend them together because we're responding on the fires anyway. That is something that we had talked about that we were going to do as non-compensable with the town. The inspections, because it has an increased workload for us and takes it off of them, that needs to be compensated to the district in time. But if we're on the fire, we're working it, and that is more of our expertise and not Brian Erickson, who's the town fire marshal, and that's what we had talked about. We'll make that one separate because the town actually will relinquish their authority to us, which they can do under RCW, to do those investigations. And we'll work hand in hand with the local arson investigation people if it goes down that road or whatever. It would just be our responsibility that we had talked about before, but I wanted to be sure that you got that information, that we are a step closer. If you recall, last I mentioned that we were waiting on that draft, visiting with Administrator Cole said the biggest part, and I can understand, and you will too, from the town's perspective, they needed to get their collective bargaining agreement done with the town, that finalized, and she immediately got on board and got this ILA to us.
Very good. So, are they going to vote on it or not? Can they vote on it?
It's on the agenda, but.
But without our approval, they can't, right?
No. Well, they could do anything.
Well, but it's.
But.
Approved by your side.
It's not approved, so even if they were to vote on it without our approval, it'd be really.
It wouldn't go into effect.
It'd be binding.
It wouldn't be binding, which is why I think, but it's one of those, we talked about some nuances. We talked early on, this is the first draft, it's a lot of boilerplate verbiage. Well, this is the time to sit down. I've got to call in to Denise and we'll figure out the time. We'll sit down, we'll talk through the nuances. I framed it up in an email to her so she can ponder it. So when we get together, it's like, oh yeah, this makes sense and here's where we're at. And then that will come before all of you for a decision. And I want to make sure that it's closer before we send it to legal, because we know that our legal counsel is $200 an hour. I want to make sure that it's closer as they review it with a fine tooth comb to make sure that our citizens are protected, that we're as close as we possibly can. So it's the fastest review possible.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that'll be a big step in the right direction. I know we've been talking about that for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Even before you got here,
mm-hmm.
We've been talking about that. They just never be able to pull the trigger on it. Okay. So we're to reports.
Right. Sorry about that. I wanted to make sure that we covered that.
Right. Before we start, I'm missing, and I had it here. So let me go through. Yeah, I'm missing that the financial monthly.
This one.
And I was looking at it and it's not.
There's good. One there.
Do you have two or do you only have one?
That one's yours.
That one's yours.
Oh, okay. Two. Okay.
It was hiding on you.
Uh-huh.
It was hiding.
Okay. All right. Now I'm ready.
Perfect. Year to date, target is less than 17% for overall. Oh, sorry. Overall. Calendar year.
Yeah.
Remember, this is always on the 1 month retrospective. Less than 17% is where we want to be for targeting. Obviously, we like it if it's greater than that for revenues, but we definitely want to be well within budget as we look at expenditures. As you notice at the top, as has been reflected on the last couple months, our beginning fund balance was at 104%. So we projected one amount and we were actually even more within our budget. So that raised our beginning fund balances. As we know, this time of year is when taxes start to come in, which is why we're at 3% on the general fund overall for the actuals. What is really good to see as you look at that reserve fund and the LOSAP, the reason those numbers are already over 100%, we're at 122% of the revenue in reserve fund and 124% for the revenue in LOSAP, is because we're actually starting to get some interests on the money that we have in those accounts. As you know, the last couple of years, we've been getting less than $100 in overall interest rates. As you can see right now, we had budgeted, and it was predominantly the interest for the reserve fund. We had budgeted $900, extremely conservative, because that's what the last 2 years have shown. We're at $1,095 at 122% for revenue on that, which is predominantly, like I said, the interest bearing. For expenditure, oh, sorry, did you
ask? Yeah, on the LOSAP fund.
Yes.
We're still holding funds because we still have people that can draw that.
That is correct. Point. That is correct.
Are we? Are we within budget, over budgeted, under budgeted on the LOSAP funds?
We have budgeted to pay out anybody that is still within the LOSAP system, as you had directed, that if 100% of them pull their LOSAP funding, we will match out right where we need to be.
Okay.
That's how it was predicated.
We're not putting any money in the LOSAP funding. The only money that comes in is interest.
That is correct. That is correct.
Okay.
Anything else? Anything else?
No.
Okay. On expenditures, remember our target to be at budget is less than 17% overall for personnel services. We are at 13% of budget, so well within. Materials and services, we are at 10%. As we know, early on in the year, we get some of the annual costing that comes into play. We have no bank loan because that's where we have set aside some funds for the upcoming boat purchase. The capital projects in reserve, we have that set aside as well. So we are at 4% for capital projects because we haven't gotten down that road. Some of it is for outfitting the boat. We have one of the a second UTV for dynamic deployment is within that number, and we're sitting at 4%. So overall for expenditures, we are at 12% where the target is 17. So we are well within budget for to date. Any questions on the overall before we move on to specifics for February? Okay, February, one of the reasons, if you look at the balances and what's coming in on cash wise, we had, so you would say, okay, is this all tax fund that's coming in into the general fund? The loan that we had for the apparatus, we had a $25,000 a month payment approximately. They had an extra 1 month of payment sitting in that account because they always were kind of a month ahead, make sure they could pay it what it was, and then they re-put it in. Well, Robin and I were looking at stuff and we're like, why is there still $25,000 sitting in this account for a payment for a loan that got paid off in November? Oh, that was a mistake on their part. We talked to them. They've now moved it back into general fund where it belonged because that's where it was always being drawn from. So it just cleaned up that account, so it's not sitting out there anymore, which is why you will see that there's a greater amount that came in. If you look at the revenues specifically, it's that $24,000 on the third page where it shows fund revenues coming in. The $24,558 was what we've got taxes that came in February. We know that historically we start to get tax money starts coming in March or so. So that's starting to come in now, but it will be reported on next month. Payroll, as you know, as a service entity, that's generally one of the highest that we have, and we will, and we are well within budget for February. And that concludes the financials. I'd be happy to answer any questions on that.
On the last page,
mm-hmm.
Revenue and expenses for February.
Yes.
So we show a total revenue of $49,659.
Correct.
And expenses of $147,000.
That's correct.
So that raises a red flag for me.
Okay.
And I know you have an answer. So let's hear it.
So remember that the revenues are looked at from an annual basis. So that's why we have the in the industry and in the fire service, it's known as the dry time spending in the government side. So when you close out a budget and you don't have tax funds coming in, that's why you have a greater anticipated ending fund balance to make sure that before the next level of taxes come in, because we're not a profit generator. It's all by taxes. So what you want to make sure of, and this is one of the nice things about having a calendar year budget as opposed to a fiscal year budget, the calendar year budget starting in January. So we can manage through the end of the year, plan out to when the next taxes start coming in March, for example. We'll plan out. You have to have enough money sitting in your reserve banks, so general fund and reserves, to get you through that time until the tax money starts coming in. Because as you notice, the overall budget, if you look at the overall, there is $1.947 million in budgeted revenues coming in for general fund for tax purposes. Well, you have to plan that out. So until tax money comes in, those revenues are going to be low. So you want to have enough in that amount to pay payroll, to pay materials and services. And that's why it's low, because you're not getting tax money coming in February. But budget management is, we knew that. So we plan that forward. The fiscal year budget, a lot of the departments around the country have July 1 through June. So their dry time spending is from July when their budget starts through November. So they go very conservative in what they're spending through that period of time. Basically, they will say, you're not doing any capital purchases, it's personnel only and minimal materials and services until you can start getting tax money in November. We're fortunate that we don't do that, but we still plan to that piece. So that's why you see revenues at 49,000 with payroll. And we had two 24-day period payrolls and a 30-day, correct, Robin, during that February timeframe?
No, I had one of each.
One of each, okay. So, but that's planned. So we know that that's lower. And then as tax money starts coming in, it's going to get us closer to what our target is of the total revenue. Does that make sense?
Yes. So the other thing I've seen then is that if it hadn't have been for that $24,000 for the boat, which is a one-time thing, we would we still had enough funds.
Yeah. Yes, because if you look at the fund balances on the very first page, you have $478,000 in the bank.
In reserve.
No, total between reserve, general fund, and LOSAP, yeah, you've got $478,000 as a government budgeting standpoint. That's what you have.
Okay, I see it.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, financials
are covered.
Are covered. All right, staff report.
So staff report, what I would like, if you have any questions for Training Officer Kutsing, I think one of the huge kudos right now, and he's going to like stop pulling out what residual hair. Oh, I'm sorry. You already took care of pulling out all your hair. This is the final week for the EMT class. They do their finals for that on Saturday, Sunday, practicals and written. It is stressing Carl out. I don't know why he's the instructor. The students are doing really well, and our instructor is stressing because he wants to make sure that our students get everything they need. And I'd like to give him an opportunity, because not only is he putting together the fire training that goes on constantly, the ongoing medical training, but he's also doing the EMT course to make sure that they come out knowledgeable from didactic, skill sets so they're ready to perform and prepared for the National Registry test. Would you like to talk about our group that's going through the EMT course?
Yeah, thank you, Chief. Yeah, they're doing great. We lost a few to attrition. There were a couple of people who, due to scheduling, ended up starting late and realized that they just couldn't keep up. So they opted out to remove themselves, and we'll try it again next time we put on a class. But those remaining doing extremely well. We're trying something new for the first time, using a evaluation tool that is supposed to emulate the National Registry Examination. The way the state of Washington works is it is absolutely essential to pass the National Registry Exam to become an EMT in the state of Washington.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, that was a relatively new rule change. I want to say that was within the last 10 years. They made that happen. And as from an education standpoint, you always hate to teach to a test, and I don't. However, we want to prepare them to take that examination. And it's a weird examination. Commissioner Colley's gone through it. It is a I'm sorry, the term is
FISDAP.
Well, FISDAP is the platform we're using, but the National Registry is a test that moves. It has a moving target, one of us. Adaptive test, that's it. Thank you. Where if you answer a question correctly at a basic level, they give one that's a little more difficult. And if you do that well, they give one that's a little more difficult. If you miss that one, they bump you back down to work your way back up. So it's this adaptive test that can be very trying. But this FISDAP, which is the platform that we're using, helps those students adapt and get a feel for what that test looks like. And they're doing well. They're doing very well. The first one was, oh boy, everybody kind of thought, mm-hmm. But we done about 6 unit exams, and they're doing very well. The cumulative, the last one, it's a 3.5-hour exam at the end here to kind of make sure that they've gotten all the content that they need through the course delivery and get some very well prepared for the national registry. So that comes up on Saturday, and then Sunday's the last the skills evaluation. So we're on track, and they're doing well, and they haven't lynched me yet. So
kudos to you to do that.
I think that getting whatever program that is to get them used to the national registry, because there is nothing saying about the national registry test. And if they understand that going into it, you don't get the same reaction that everybody walking out of that thing says is what happened to me.
Right.
And so I think that's you coming up with that idea. It takes the stress out of them. They know what they're walking into.
Right.
And
it doesn't eliminate the stress. They're all still stressed.
They're all stressed.
That's the way it works.
But it's if you know some, because I know when I took it, I'm sure that I had absolutely no idea what I was walking into. And it was kind of a funny thing because I'm that time you went over to the University of Washington over here, and I'm filling out whatever security things they make you do. And this woman comes out just in tears, just wailing and wailing. I'm looking at her and I said, "What test did you just take?" She said, "I just took the EMT test." And I went, "Oh." Well, that didn't help me at all.
Well, I'm confident. They know their stuff. They're doing well.
And the crews have been coming in to help during practicals to work them through the stuff. So the students are getting comfortable with the existing responders. Carl and Assistant Chief Monin have done a good job in putting this course together to support the membership so that they'll be able to fit the goal that I've always set for them. That's a competency base. So Carl's assuring that they're going to be able to take the test. But in the bottom line between operations and myself, in order to meet our mission, they have to be competent when they go out there. And they're doing it from that standpoint that they will be able to be competent in applying the skill set and taking care of our citizens. One of the feedbacks that we did get throughout the course we've brought to Carl to see if it can be engaged is a couple of the classes, we had a couple of our canine crisis teams that were part of it. So they're getting comfortable with the membership, with the skill sets that are going on, because in a stressful environment, they may be out in the environment. It was interesting to talk to the handlers because the dogs who have been accustomed to coming on board during all department drills see us as we're fine and okay. Well, now they've got bandages on their head and they're being strapped to boards, and the dogs were getting stressed on what's happening to my people. Right? What's happening to my responders, my firefighters, my EMTs? So they were learning on interacting better. But the other interesting piece was there's been a couple people that when they were there taking some tests, that the dogs rotated the room and some people were stressed during the test. The dog came up, picked up some cues, hung out with them, and they said, "That calmed me." So what has been offered by both Cynthia Parkin and Jet, one of our handler teams, and Raquel Lackey and one of the three of her dogs to be available during that 3-hour battery of testing. To if we can do things to set our students up and our future responders up to be successful, well, let's do it. Our handler teams are willing to come in. If it will fit and work for what Carl and the team needs, that will be out and that will be part of their testing. And see if we can keep people as relaxed in the testing environment as we can, because we know it's stressful, right? So we'll see how that plays.
Are you able to do that?
Yeah, I talked with Cynthia last night, and we're trying to figure out a good balance, because we don't necessarily want to bring the canines into the testing unit, but maybe make it available. If it's a time test, I have no problem with, 3.5 hours, a long time. You need to get up, stretch, move, that's fine. And then having the dogs available during that kind of self-scheduled break, I think will work well.
So thanks for that. Kudos to you and your team.
Very good.
It's Chief Monin, all yours.
Chief,
Yeah, thank you, Carl. I apologize for providing the wrong date, dated report. I gave a fresh copy of the 14th of March 2023 monthly ops report. Commissioner Olson, we'll have that available for you digitally because you remote.
Okay.
So briefly, February of this year, we had 56 responses total. 61% of those were EMS and rescue. All their fires, hazards, and services were 39%. It's an average of 2 calls a day. Our reaction time was under the 90-second benchmark. It was a minute and 27 seconds. Kudos to the crew for getting out the door and getting after things. And then the travel times were a little bit lower than typical at 7 minutes and 15 seconds. And that's just because the proximity to town call volume. I've got a couple graphs for you here. Just breaks down the total responses by station area. And as you would expect, station 31 is our high call volume area. We do track the travel times by zone, just so we have a better understanding of how those services affect the citizens of the community as they live further away from our 24/7 shift crew. And as you'd expect, the further out folks live, the longer it takes to get there. But we are tracking that, and you can see that those travel times are all averaged together at the top of the sheet at 7 minutes 15 seconds. Obviously, the south central zone is quicker than, or the south zone is quicker than the north zone, which is the furthest out. And the other side's blank. So updates on that. Thank you. Our minimum staffing was met in February, and I just wanted to make a comment about our volunteers. We have our staff has done an excellent job of meeting that minimum staffing and meeting schedules and flexing their time and working through their schedules to help each other out to make sure we meet that. But without the volunteers, we wouldn't be able to meet that minimum staffing because sometimes we have, you know, a staff person out and other staff can't cover. So we have staff out now on planned family events. Families are growing, and some of our members like to take a little time off when that happens. And as a result, we do have coverages that are needed. And without our volunteer support, we wouldn't be able to meet that. And I just want to state that we have several volunteers that really stepped up a lot to help out and make sure that the engine's staffed and we have the 24/7 coverage. Just a quick note, 15% less call volume than the same period last year, over February of last year. Nothing significant there, but we do watch that. And then the as I said, the reaction time was under 90 seconds. Travel time is normal. And then Carl gave you a brief on the EMT recruit class. It's on schedule, and exams and anxiety will be at a high level this weekend. So keep them all in your thoughts. Other than that, everything's set.
Great. How do you see, from an operational point, how do you see the inspections that will be done in the city? How do you see that affecting operations, or do you?
I don't. It will be. But in my mind, it'll be a scheduled activity. A big component of it is its relationship with the entities that we would be inspecting. So we're not going to surprise inspect. It's going to be a scheduled piece. And then working with the crew, we'll manage, you know, a good timing on it, making sure you're not disrupting business during, you know, the height. You know, if it's a restaurant, you want to be in there at lunchtime doing that, right? There's enough businesses and commercial entities in town that we really need to be doing this as a matter of community safety and keeping an eye on things. But it's not so much that it can't be managed throughout the year. And if the shift crew can hit a couple here and there, it's going to add up and they'll be able to accomplish it.
Great. And then for you, Chief, how do you see the compensation end of it working for us? Do you see it as a contract for the year, or do you see it as a inspection by inspection, or
So with the town specifically, I think that what we would frame up in that ILA would be an annual contract based on the number of inspections and a matrices that would come in. So obviously, we're not going to be taking on some of the more technical inspections like the hospital, the school, the jail facility. Those are more technical inspections. Any SARA titles, hazmat facilities, town fire marshal would keep those. We will look at ones that are realistic for a company level inspection to do. So the B2 level inspection. So your standard businesses, you could do restaurants, make sure that the hood systems are maintained appropriately, so on and so forth. The other piece that we want to make sure of that we're taking on is the multifamily residences. So any apartment complexes or areas that we've got that are commercial. And that's one of the things that we want to work through, because that's where we have the greatest potential for life safety risks that can be mitigated by being present. If so, say that you're doing an inspection at the management room for an apartment complex, we'll schedule at the same time to do some walk and knocks on the residents and do smoke detector checks. We did have American Red Cross reach out to us that they're trying to do a smoke detector program and get out and about. They want to do that in partnership with the fire departments in the county. So that will hit a life safety issue that we want to do. So I see it as an annual auto renewing based on the number of inspections done per year. And that's where we're going to look at that costing piece with the town. So it's indirectly a per inspection because it's a total number, but I think that that's an annual piece. And if they're more complex, well, that how much time is it going to take? And we know that this is new for the crews that'll be going out and doing it. Their inspections will take longer as they get better with it. They get to know the business owners get to know exactly what's going on, because the reason this was a gap we needed to fill is they haven't been done on a regular basis, if at all. And I will say kudos to the mayor, the past mayor, the town administrator, that they saw that this was an issue that needed to be addressed. And that was one of the pieces that was a focus point for the new fire marshal and plans person, Ryan Erickson, for the town, that we needed to make change. He needed to make change. And this is the logical next step. So it's a partnership between us. The nice thing about the way that this will be written is our crews will be out in public, but the town will hold the hammer, so to speak, that if they're not abiding and making the changes necessary to meet the adopted fire life safety code, they will follow up. Ryan will follow up and say, hey, you got to change this, because really, as you're aware, that if you own that part, if they're not doing things and is putting the community and the citizens and visitors at risk, the code allows you to shut down the business. Well, we didn't want to take that liability on, because that is more of Fire Marshal Erickson's expertise. They will own that piece. We will do the initial inspection, a follow-up with, hey, here's what you need to fix, and then they will follow up. So I think this is going to be a really positive partnership with the town and us, and it will make the community safer and the businesses safer for residents and visitors.
Great. Are we planning on doing any inspections outside of the city, or is that?
No, because that will currently, so no, because that falls under the county. As we've talked about before, my goal would be get it set within the town, work through the nuances, get the model to work, then present off to Fire Marshal Kimple at the county level that says, hey, you're the only fire marshal for the county. Here's the plan of what we put together for the town. We'd like to be able to do the same for our area. I would not want to put the burden on the Shaw, the Lopez, and the Orcas without plan. But I think that if we can put a basic level together, that it's very applicable as an overlay that would free up Fire Marshal Kimple to be doing other stuff as well and serving the underserved islands of the county. So start with the town, then potentially grow. But no inspections outside of the town at this point.
Great, thanks. Okay, comments, Albert?
Not right now.
I have one other piece to report on as staff report. The fire agencies are looking at putting in another federal FEMA SAFER grant. We're actually putting in two. And they're both going to fall under. So there is the Assistant Firefighter Grant, and a secondary one of that is the SAFER one, which is staffing for firefighter. No, staffing for adequate firefighter for emergency response. That's what SAFER stands for. Those are scaled from the FDNY full career departments down to all volunteer departments and everything in between, combination otherwise. They look favorably upon regional grants. We know that because the SCBAs that we did as a regional grant consortium, we were awarded the highest grant in the state of Washington when we bought consistent SCBAs for the self-contained breathing apparatus for all of the responder agencies. We are in the process that's due Friday. Orcas is willing because they had already had the process in play on managing a grant. They are taking this on, and we are doing two regional grants. One of them is going to be a benefit slash incentive piece for recruitment and retention, more on the retention side for insurance. And what it is, the way that it's designed, Orcas's assistant chief, when she was with slip in my head which department she was with.
Bremerton?
No, but it was another B one, one of the islands.
Bainbridge,
thank you. They had a program to help incentivize volunteers to pull some shifts, coverage from home or otherwise, so that you knew you had additional depth. That said, if you covered a certain amount of hours per month, and they had it at 120 hours per month of being readable on call from home or otherwise, if you covered 120 hours, the department would pay for your health premium reimbursed. So it doesn't have a tax implication that they're giving it to you. You show reimbursement, you submit that you paid, you met that 120 hours, you got 100% of that premium paid for. If you had less than that, and it was scalable, that if you had a certain block of hours up to that 120, they would pay 50%. They rolled under the fire department's insurance. Well, as we talked about it, we said this is a great concept so that we have absolute depth. And because we know that some families can be struggling, if you've got people that are able to retire, excuse me, but not old enough to get Social Security or Medicare, well, they have to keep working, sometimes specifically for insurance. Well, if you can demonstrate that you've got the insurance by covering those hours, it's covered. We're putting in a grant to do that coverage piece. The one piece we did say, because the Washington Fire Commissioners has some specific nuances that would preclude a number of our people from being able to participate, we said, doesn't matter where you get it. If you have an employer that pays part of your insurance for your family or yourself, since it's a reimbursable piece, we will create new policy, which would come before you if we play this out and we get it. But you submit, you get reimbursed for that if you meet the minimum number of hours for that. That's one of the grants. The second one, and another kudos to Assistant Chief Monin and Training Officer Kutzing. We know that the last County Fire Academy was very successful. We brought on new people. We were able to support them from a combined mixed media presentation for the training purposes. And then we brought everyone together for the live fire training, which helps them work interdependently. We're doing a recruitment grant through the same SAFER piece for bringing people on for Recruit Academy for the county, for all of our fire agencies. One of the other pieces, because we found that if you can get people to interact better, you get better training and better interactivity on mutual aid. So another component that is being written into this is transportation costs. So whether they use the ferry, whether we come up with a fully costing for us to pick up people from Lopez and Orcas to come over and we do hands-on together training, or we send our new recruits out. We're now going to continue that interoperability between all the agencies on the island. That will all be written in. We're also writing, and even though we have it scheduled to do an academy in the fall, we're looking at twofold, and we're putting money in for recruiting materials, so mailers and the like, for recruiting for all of the county, for the regions that we have for the four departments. We already have it scheduled. We're not sure. They say that they're going to start awarding these in June. Well, we're not going to hold our breath that they're going to do that. But we know that we will have ongoing academies. It will be for fire. It will be for EMS. That's how this training plan is being written for safety. But what we did talk about was potentially, and Assistant Chief Mon and I have talked about, and it's worked in the past, we're looking at potentially doing a recruiting now to bring on some wildland firefighters with a shortened piece at the end of May so they would be ready for fire season, with the expectations that they will then take the fire academy that starts in the fall. The reason we picked the fall is it worked for us from a timing standpoint. It worked for the other agencies, and we know that people will leave on vacations and otherwise during the summer, so we didn't want to stack that on top because we knew we would be missing out on people that might be able to be interested in being responders. The other thing that we're putting in to play on this one is a concurrent exterior-only firefighter, as we're putting out, that will be at the same academy as an interior one. So what that means is that we have people that have no interest in going inside of a fire, afraid of it, not older, and says, yeah, I'm 65 and I have no interest in crawling around on the ground anymore. This was a quote from some people they talked about on Orcas. It's valid anywhere. You could have 55-year-olds that don't want to crawl around on the ground and go into that environment. Well, we know that there's exterior stuff to do. We know that if we can get people on scene and able to pull a hose and squirt from the exterior in a transitional attack, the faster we can put out and mitigate the fire, the faster and we improve life safety within the structure. Yes, prevent it to begin with. But if and when it happens, let's have exterior only. They can pull the hose. They know how to change the bottles. They know what's going to be needed tool-wise for forcible entry, for ventilation. They work in the exterior yellow zone at the worst with the right equipment. They're not going in to the IDLH, the imminent death or health issues. That's for the full side. But they go at the same academy, so they're coming in with the same cohort. They understand what's going on. They're able to support the community. And it's still based on, while they're not getting a Firefighter 1 or Firefighter 2 standard out of the end of the academy, they are having the training based on an NFPA 1403 standard so that they're absolutely safe operating on the fire ground. They will have the same ICS knowledge base, the 100, 200, 700, 800, so they can operate on scene and communicate appropriately. We think that it will give depth, and we know from past experience that give them the little bug, bring them in as an exterior only. They're like, oh, hey, I want to go inside too. Or it opens up someone like a Harry C and some other people that I don't want to go inside. We've got enough pump operators. Well, I can pull a hose and squirt from the outside. We're fully capable, which frees us up more people to do interior operations, because we know that if you follow an NFPA standard to work an interior structure with a rescue, you need a minimum of 24 people on scene. So therefore, how do we recruit people from that standpoint? So that's what we've got. I wanted to mention that we're looking at submitting for a couple grants. They're 100% funded grants because it's in the recruitment and retention. We'll know they'll be submitted by the end of the week. We're putting numbers together before it was successful. Before, keep your fingers crossed that one or both. The insurance one was a primary last year. It's a secondary priority on the federal level this year as they rate, but the training one is a high priority. We talked about putting them in together, but we said, not sure we want to do that, so we're submitting two. So any questions on that? And that's where we're going.
I got a question. It's something I already should already know the answer to, so I'm feeling a little shy. You say a regional training.
Mm-hmm.
Are the all four of us in the WIA region, or do we take some from the main one?
No, just the four of us within San Juan County. It's Shaw, Lopez, Orcas, us.
Albert, any questions?
No, I'm fine.
Okay, on the insurance one.
Like that.
Yeah, it's a great idea, but I'm not real clear on how that works. So when you say that they will pay the insurance premium.
Reimbursed.
Whose premium are they saying that wrong? What insurance are we talking about? Are we
health? Health.
Okay, I got that.
Okay.
Where's that health insurance coming from to begin with?
Wherever the individual volunteer member has their insurance through, whether it's open market, whether it's employer, whatever.
So if they work for
XYZ company.
And they get insurance from Opalco. But they give you this 120 hours as an example. We will reimburse what Opalco is, what they have to pay for their part of the Opalco insurance.
Yes.
So if their premiums are $300 or $400, we'll pay, there's no limit on.
Well, we will set a limit. So, and these are some of the nuances. So some of the structure, so we've got the, how many hours do you put into play? But then the reimbursement side will be up to whatever our Washington Fire Commissioner's insurance would be. So if you've, so say, for example, I'm just going to pull fictitious numbers for now. Say that an individual rate is $750 a month through us, but they have at XYZ business, their insurance premium is $1,000 a month that they need to pay. We would reimburse if they meet the time requirement, we will reimburse $750. Okay. The other thing that we talked about was, well, what if I get 100% of medical, but we hardly get anything for dental or vision? We're writing it that it's for health premiums. So if their employer pays for their health premium, but they don't the others, and they give us the hours, we will reimburse their vision and dental part of it. We're hoping that this will entice people to stay. And as we look at ways to retain some of our membership, because if you want to raise an hourly rate for a member, well, then they're part-time employees, right? That comes onto that with the expectations of a part-time employee, expectations and otherwise. Well, we want to create the ability to still have flexibility for the volunteer so that if they're not able because of family commitments or otherwise. They give 120 hours, they could have it reimbursed.
Okay.
So the other thing we wanted to do on that, on the 120 hours, say you've got someone that they know they're going to take a long, let's go David Howitt, for example. Private business owner, has to cover insurance. But we know he works all summer on the boat. Well, he could stack, as we're contemplating the policy, he could stack all of his hours to cover for his 3 months of reimbursement in the summer by going before or after that time block for him. But what we wanted to do to make sure it was absolutely fair to each of the members is it will go in priority. So this would be a really good problem to have. We have more people want to do the staffing then we have open time blocks. Well, what if someone is trying to stack for that middle 3 months? The priority for sign up are on the least number of hours. First sign up, and if there's still open shifts, then other people that have higher hours can grab those. So we want to make sure it's an even distribution and opportunities.
Okay, so that 120 hours has to be spent here in the firehouse.
Correct. Well, no. It is on call, ready to go. And 120 hours is what Bainbridge did. We can pick whatever that cap number is. We're using 120 because that was the example.
So
it will give 24-hour staffing either in the station or available from home at night, two people per shift. So what that means is if we have a call that comes in and you must go on the call, like we know we need to, right? What happens is the call will drop. Those two that are on call will respond on the call either to the station for backfill, or it's a fire. They'll come in, they'll get on rig, they go on the call. But they go. That's the 120 hours. They could do it here, they could do it at home, but they're on the hook. What we talked about from the standpoint of having the possibility of six per shift, operations, as you see from your reports, were broken into three zones. We have two people per zone. So we look at, if you look at your response numbers on how long it takes us to get to the north zone or the central zone, if we have someone that's covering this, call drops in the Roach Harbor area, those two people go to the station, get the rig, respond on the call. That reduces travel time, response time, and they get their health premiums paid for if they meet that number of hours. So we want six, two north, two central, two south.
This could be a way to resolve our issue with the summertime coverage in Roach Harbor.
It very easily could. And it's a four-year grant. It's a 48-month grant, 100% funded. So it doesn't have a hook to us, which is why we're like, well, this would be silly not to put in for both of these grants, which are 100% funded.
Yeah. I think that's a very slick way of reimbursing our members. Yeah. without it costing them anything. Because as I spoke at the meeting the other day, at the work session, you know, we've seen this drop in people showing up because of what you said, the 25 to 55 people, they got families, they got to work, they got to work two jobs, whatever it is. Just the fact that they can be at night in their own place and still respond to their zone wherever they go. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to cost them tax money to get their, I know in my case, I'd love someone to take the $674 a month I pay. Mm-hmm. You know,
we have an opening.
Fortunately, that those kids are getting off my policy, so it drops down to 104.
Much more reasonable.
But I think.
I think it's a great idea. Hopefully, we can get this.
Yeah. So that's all we have for staff reports. Thank you for your time.
Okay.
Happy to answer any questions on any of the reports thus far.
Okay, Albert, do you have any questions or comments?
Well, I'd just like to thank Carl for all his effort with the EMT class. Having done that in my previous life, it's a lot of work, and I hope we can keep him excited and keep him enthused to keep coming back. So great job, Carl.
Thank you.
Yeah, I want to second his comments. I also do a lot of EMT training in my department, and I used to have a squirt gun.
Yeah.
That's how I kept the little. Well, actually, I should correct that. I didn't. My partner had one.
Yeah.
Until I took it away from him. So I can't do that anymore. That was a different time. But it is a lot of work, and it's very rewarding too, but it can be really tough. Okay. If there's nothing else to talk about, I asked him for comments, I asked you for comments, no comments there. So one of the things that we do on a yearly basis is set goals and look at the direction of our department. And I will be meeting with the chief about a variety of things in the near future. But what I'd like is some feedback from Albert and Dwight on what goals you see that we want to attain this fiscal year, this calendar year also, and maybe how have we done with goals that we've had set in the past. So I'm not looking for an answer today or tomorrow, but within maybe the next week or two, if you could just jot down some notes, what your thoughts are, so that I can kind of process that information and then have a conversation with the chief, and along with some of the other things that we've talked about today, especially the bank. I think that's something that we need to really get out of the way. We'll have to look at that. So if there's nothing else, do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
And second, he beat you on that one. Okay, so I have a motion and a second. I have a hearing, no comments. This meeting is adjourned.
Goodbye, all.